Hey everyone, I'm interrupting this episode because I want to tell you about a free masterclass that I'm hosting. I'm constantly hearing from motion designers and studio owners that they just don't have the time to work on their businesses. And I get it, it's hard to wear all the hats in your business and stay on top of everything. When the project ends, do you find yourself scrambling for the next gig on LinkedIn or sending a ton of cold emails? This just isn't sustainable in the long run. I found that building systems and processes in my business to free up my time was the best way to grow a business and have more time to do the things that I love. It's not easy, but I want to share with you what I've learned over the past few years and also what I've been teaching my students in my courses. So I'm hosting a free masterclass on the 21st of May for freelance motion designers and studio owners who are looking for more balance. After Balance Business Masterclass, you're going to walk away with a system to help you save time, make more money, and work on fun and creative projects. Of course, I'll also be doing a live Q&A to answer any questions that you have. And I'm going to invite just 20 people to work with me inside my coaching program, Balance Business Bootcamp. This won't open again until later this year. So if you want to get access to that and you want to join us in this free masterclass, then go and find the link in the show notes to register or go to motionhatch.com/pod. Hope to see you in there. Now let's get back to this episode.
So what we do is we always ask for them to give us a number at the beginning. So if someone sends us an email and they say, oh, we have this new campaign for Google for their website, you have no idea if this is the biggest campaign of the year for Google or if this is a little thing that Google is going to have for a week on a side of their website. So if they give you an initial number, and we don't really engage in more conversation until they give us that number. And once we have the number, now we know what we are talking about.
Hey Hatchlings, welcome to the Motion Hatch podcast. I'm your host, Hayley Akins. Hey Hatchlings, and welcome to episode 91 of the Motion Hatch podcast. So today I'm joined by Abel and Katie from Cabeza Patata. They are an incredible creative studio who specialize in character design. In this episode, we uncovered how to build your own studio, only working direct to client and in your own style. So for most of you, I know that this is a dream. So I brought Katie and Abel on to tell us just how they did that. They gave us so many fantastic tips on how they consistently put out great work on their Instagram and how they land big clients like Spotify. We also spoke about how they find out the budget from every single client they get. So this is an episode you really do not want to miss. Just before we jump into the episode, I did want to read a quick review we got from Jack Redley about the podcast. He said, a designer friend of mine told me to listen to this, and at first I was skeptical because I'm not a motion designer, but a brand identity designer. How wrong was I? This podcast has been insanely useful. Episodes cover a host of topics which any designer from any discipline needs to know about. Work-life balance, accountancy, marketing, networking, business, and mental health. I've also been considering learning motion design as a result of this podcast. But the gems sprinkled throughout the episodes about a whole host of other topics have been invaluable. Thanks so much, Jack, for leaving this fantastic review for us. If you've been listening to the Motion Hatch podcast for a while and you haven't left us a review yet, please do leave us a rating and review wherever you get your podcast from. We really do appreciate it and we try to read every single one. So let's get into this episode. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
So I wanted to bring you both on because it seems like you're doing some really great and really interesting things. I saw that recently you were part of a fashion campaign. So I wondered, how did that happen?
Yeah, I'm wondering as well, how did that happen? That was the first time that I've been part of a fashion campaign.
We were, the campaign we did with Outside the Division that we put online, that came because we met the creator of the brand of Outside the Division. He lives in Barcelona, and we have some mutual friends.
I think we're talking about Mono Navy.
Are we talking about, depending on where we are, we have done two different ones. We have done two different things. The thing with Outside the Division is we help promoting the new launch, the new clothes that he's launching at the end of this year. And with Mono Navy, we made some patterns for the jackets.
I think that's what you're talking about because we became the models.
Okay.
Mono Navy.
Ah, okay.
is a we've done a lot of different fashion things.
Yeah,
but you're confusing them all in my
yeah.
mind.
Yeah, because I was not talking about Mono Navy now.
Three different ones.
Yeah, we have three different things.
No, that's really interesting because I feel like it, you know, for me, it's something that I wouldn't necessarily associate with like being a motion design and animation studio, you know, doing lots of stuff with fashion. So you're saying you did, you've done some of like patterns and stuff like that. So is that how you kind of got into that? And then that kind of led to you doing some modeling as well?
Yeah, sort of. The Mono Navy is a Korean fashion brand. And we met the founder, Jackie, through our studio where we're working. And her new campaign is about getting all sorts of different people joining into the campaign and saying what they do and what they are. So through work, we met her and then we were keen to join in with her new campaign.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a funny thing that came about through work, but not directly related to our characters. Because usually we put our characters in the fashion. We don't really like to be in front of the camera, but this was a nice chance. And we are always up for trying something new, really.
Yeah, and we've been connecting a lot of our characters with fashion. I mean, from the beginning, we've been making clothes for them, and it's a big, big part of how they look is the clothes they are wearing. So that's why I think I'm confusing different brands and different fashion campaigns, because we've been doing a lot of things and connecting a lot with people that are running small brands, and we really like that. The one with Outside the Division is when we make the dogs wearing the clothes from them. And
with
then
the Labo Mono, we just made prints for the inside of his new range of jackets. Mm. So some of the prep patterns that our characters wear in 3D now people can wear in real life, which is super fun.
Yeah, it sounds really great. So, I mean, I think it's really interesting because you built this amazing studio and also quite a big following. I'd love to know like how you started the studio, and I'm particularly interested in whether you already had like the style of characters or it's kind of been developed with the studio, because it feels like, and looking at your Instagram, you just sort of started working together and these characters came out and you're like, yes, this is a thing. And then you started the studio. But I mean, you tell me how it came about.
Yeah, that's sort of it. It all came about quite organically. I think we didn't set out deciding to make a studio and work together. Funnily enough, you at least had always been talking about, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a partner and start making a studio in some way? And you had some collaborations with other people before, but we were both doing such different things that we didn't think that we'd join together to do it for some reason.
Yeah.
But then just naturally, because we were, as hobbies, we would work a bit together. And
we are a couple, so we had a lot of spare time in which we were doing creative things together, but never with any never thinking that it would end up being something commercial. I think the very beginning came with a lot of trying. We were doing by then in Barcelona a lot of wall painting. Katie was interested in going out in the street and painting walls, and the characters were a tool to know what to do every time. So it's the experimentation came at the beginning without even having a name for the studio. The name came later. And then once we had the name, everything went together. We made the website, and suddenly before we realized we were doing commercial work.
But definitely it started more like us just making fun things and doing things, and then more like other people asking what we were doing and suggesting that we might become a studio. And then suddenly we thought, yeah, let's do it. And so we really just put it all together in one go and realized how much stuff we had as well to share and to start making a name.
So you kind of already had some of the work and stuff like that from your experiments, because I think the struggle that everybody is having, you know, they're like, oh, maybe we want to build a studio and maybe we want to work together as a group or in like a partnership, the same as you. But I feel like they're like, well, should we just put our work, you know, our separate work together on a website, or do we have to like have a style and then work on that? Like, what is your opinion on that front?
In our case, we put aside all the personal work. We even kept our personal websites with our work, because at the beginning, we were both doing some freelance work on the side. And in our case, what worked was to separate that completely. We even got job opportunities in which they came to us to the studio saying, oh, we want to do something that has nothing to do with characters. And then we said no, because we didn't want to start turning our studio back into just freelancing. We didn't want to have to imitate someone else's style or making something that was just 3D text. We were not interested in that. But I guess it depends. I think that working like that helped us to differentiate our studio work from our freelance stuff.
Yeah, and helped, I think, in terms of clients to separate it as well. I think it depends, obviously, what kind of studio you want to make, but because we wanted to so specifically just make characters, like Abel's saying, if we got an offer for a job making 3D text, we didn't really want to do that. And so we were kind of selective at the beginning. And we didn't have that many projects on our website for that reason, because obviously we weren't including previous clients and we were saying no to some stuff. But the ones that we had were so, it was so clear, if you come to us, it's because you want this character executed like this, that I think that also really helped clients. So they'd come with that specific thing. And now obviously they know that you're like, if you want 3D text, go to someone who specializes in 3D text. Definitely for us wanting to stay as a small studio as well, we want to really specialize in the thing that we enjoy and are really good at.
And one of the things that as well that we always talk about is how at the beginning and now, it's so important to put everything together in projects. You have several images from the same subject. So for example, if we are interested in doing embroidery, for example, that if we were going to do show our embroidery, we would put it all together on the same project, and that would be within the same section in the website. So instead of having some spread out images all over your website when you don't have a lot of work, the best thing is to concentrate it, because most people, when they go to see your work, they're going to click probably the section of projects, and then they're going to click on one or two. They're not going to go through absolutely everything. So you need to be ready for when they click on something, you are going to give them a lot, something rich, something that shows that you know how to dominate that style. So if they see many images from the same series and they see that you have a color palette and you have consistency, that's, I think, when...
Yeah, exactly. And you have an intention behind the whole project and you say, oh, I wanted to explore this specific thing, and so I did. It's like you've made a commercial campaign. Quite often, actually, when we were starting, all our projects were personal. And people would say, oh, yeah, we saw that production company in London said, oh, we saw you did that CP fashion campaign.
And CP.
We were like, CP, that's Kabeza Patata Fashion. That's yeah. Sort of a personal project that we made. Mm. But we were like, yeah. So we didn't outright lie, but we kind of let her maybe think that was commercial she wanted. Mm. And I think that people can confuse that. And that's kind of the idea, is to make your personal work look as professional as possible.
Yeah, that's super smart. I love that you were just like, okay, we're going to do all these personal projects and they're going to be all around this kind of style of character, and just really sticking to your guns early on, I think it seems like that's how you become successful. But also, I imagine that was a bit scary, and it kind of makes sense that you know, when you were doing freelance work, you were like, okay, well, this is a freelance project for Abel or Katie, and then this is, a Kabeza Patata, hopefully I'm saying it right, project, you know, and you were very clear about that, because I think that is extremely difficult, especially because I think a lot of people want to do that, but they're like, well, is anyone actually going to pay for this, or like pay for this character design or this style and things like that? So what early on kind of gave you the confidence to do that?
I think it was more than only confidence. It was also just enjoyment. We definitely have always done a lot of projects together all the time that we've been together, just as a couple on a personal level. And this was maybe the one that stuck more. So it's more like we just carried on making the characters because they were working and we enjoyed making them and we found lots of different things to do with them. And I think that's the moment where you keep pushing and going for it. Obviously, you can't just say, oh, okay, I'm going to get that style and I'm just going to go for it. Even if I'm not completely sure about it, if I just go for it, I'll definitely get there. I think you need to really develop it and believe in it. and want to pursue it, not be like, look, if I just make the website and I make all the projects and I have that looking like that, then I'll get the work. I think there needs to also be that real intention behind it.
And I think as well, we never put absolutely everything onto this. What I mean is, not all our eggs were in the same basket. We were ready to freelance at the beginning on other things. It's not, I think sometimes if you make a clear cut and you say, okay, from now on, from today, I'm going to be a studio. I'm not going to do any freelance work anymore. That's quite risky. And sometimes that change and that decision comes naturally when you start getting enough projects, so you don't need to do freelance work anymore. But I mean, I think probably my personal website is still running. Yours, I think the GoDaddy payment came.
It just expired. And expired. It was a big decision for me to not renew it.
Yeah.
Only now.
But that's, I mean, we let the websites go. We haven't been updating the personal work, but they stay there. And for example, for freelance work, it's very different. I don't know how it's right now, but in motion graphics around 2013, 2014, the important thing was having a good reel. You needed to have a 1 minute piece in which you could show that you could know how to animate. And that's personally, that's how I got my jobs in freelance, as a freelancer in studios in London. That, and then through meeting people that would recommend you to other things. But yeah, this is different. The way we run Cabeza Patata and the way we promote it and we've been growing is more through growing on social media, which is something that we didn't do before.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely something that I want to talk about because I'm very passionate about doing social media marketing. And I think it's incredible that you've managed to build like a following of 60K on Instagram. And obviously, you're very consistent with that. So I'd love to talk a bit about that. I mean, from the beginning, was social media a big part of your strategy?
I think, again, we weren't probably thinking about it so much as strategy as kind of having fun with it at the time. And probably still now. Yeah. We don't have the big strategy. We try to post consistently, but also we enjoy doing things like sharing in stories or doing those silly things like polls or asking questions to people, because we actually do enjoy the feedback and engagement. And we get a lot, we have a lot of audience as well who write to us and say, I've been following you forever since the very beginning. Mm. And that was only like 3 years ago. But it does for them sort of feel like absolutely forever, because you've seen something completely grow up and you've been able to chat to the people who made it right from the beginning. Yeah, sometimes people are surprised actually that we personally still manage the social media. Because they're like, oh, that's the first thing that I dedicate to somebody. And actually, we both really like it.
We both enjoy it, yeah. And one thing that happens to us in social media is that obviously we do check what works better and some things get more likes or more engagement. And one thing that we notice is that our audience doesn't like repetition, that if we put let's say we do something made of paper, if the second time we put it, people like it less and less and less, and the third time and the fourth time. So we need to, it helps us to be trying things constantly. And I think it's very fun sometimes when we have a new idea. For example, I do like programming. So sometimes we do some interactive stuff. Right now we are trying interactive things. And because it's new, people love it. But I know that after a month of showing it, it kind of that you need to move on. And I think that's very fun. It's very playful.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of stressful sometimes. but definitely fun. Yeah. I mean, there's infinite things to try. So.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, I know I talk to a lot of motion designers every day and people who run studios, and always social media is such an issue for them. And I feel like for you both, it seems quite natural from what you're saying. But obviously you have to kind of do a lot of new things all the time and experiment a lot to have that content. How do you manage that with your client work?
So I think we are very, right now in this moment, we are very selective with client work. We are lucky enough now that when we get projects, we try to work directly with clients. We don't have a representation agency. So we try to get good budgets when we work with clients. And right now, I think around more than 50, maybe 60, 70% of the time is time for doing personal stuff. And then we want to do that, that 40% of the time that is about commercial work should be very well paid and pay for all the rest of the things we want to do. So I think that's how we manage. I mean, we do put, we don't work extra time. We usually work from 9 to 5, 9 to 6 maximum. But most of the personal work comes in the mornings when we have a lot of energy and we love working on it.
Yeah, I think definitely it sounds like a luxury to be really selective with clients. But I think if and when you're at that opportunity, it's so crucial because it might, I think you need to think of it a bit more long term, like definitely the experimentation and the time that we spend on personal work more than pays for the bigger budgets, bigger clients that come in the future. So it's like if you spend a bit more time building up your personal work and a bit more time making innovative and new things that you know people want to see, then in the future I do think there's a lot of payback. Whereas if you spend all the time on commercial work, sometimes I think people can probably identify listening to this, people will just come for what they've seen before and they'll be like, oh, I saw you made this musician, I would need a musician, and then you make it, and then someone else will come and be like, oh, I saw you made a musician for this person for that, and then you're like, do I only make musician characters now?
You copy yourself,
you copy
all the
yourself
time.
Again and again. But if you're making something new, then someone will come in the future for the new thing.
And also in personal work, because we don't have feedback, I mean, we are both working on it, but we usually don't give, I mean, sometimes we get stuck a bit and we give opinions to one another, but usually when we are doing personal work, we like going and being positive about what the other is doing. So when we're doing personal work, we go so much faster. Sometimes it's incredible, but we go 10 times faster than doing. When we are on a commercial campaign, sometimes after 2 months, you are like, okay, it's 2 months and I made 5 images. We could have made that in a week if we were working on our own.
Yeah, I think we have a bit of a mutual understanding to not be picky or get frustrated, because personal work is supposed to be fun. And also, even if something's not completely perfect, it's about repetition. So you know that if you enjoy doing it, you'll do it again and it will be better, rather than like getting stuck on one thing and then not really enjoying it in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people listening are probably in this situation. You know, maybe they're a freelancer, they want to work more on you know, a certain type of style, or they want to develop their style and maybe build that into a, more of a brand or a studio in the future and things like that. But they're doing okay and they're getting work. But how, you know, how would you kind of recommend to them to stop kind of going into this cycle of the work that you kind of don't want to do, and almost, you know, give yourself that time to do that personal work, to develop your career, to get the kind of work you want to do? Because I think that's like a really hard thing to do, you know, and I would love to hear from you both about how you would kind of manage that, or how you potentially did that in the past.
I think one of the main things for me when I was a freelancer is put up your rates, make more money, because more money means that you can have longer holidays and more spare time. What I think is, when I remember being a freelancer, especially when I had to travel to studios in London, they would ask me to go to location, and between sometimes taking 1 hour to arrive there, working for 8 hours, sometimes a bit more because you have a very short lunch break, and then coming back home. By the time you arrive at 7 p.m. home, you are basically hungry and a bit sleepy. And the last thing you want to do is to sit down in front of the computer and be like, okay, now I'm going to do creative personal work. So I think if you charge a lot, that can help a lot. And I think from the beginning when I was freelancing, I was trying to save money. So I didn't have that feeling of like I was making the money and spending the money. And I mean, when I was freelancing in London as well, there was this environment that, especially when you were working in studios, you would make more or less good money, a good day rate. But then people were going for silly drinks on Friday. You spend all the money you made on Friday, you spend it on a stupid night out, and then you feel tired on Saturday. So you get into this behavior circles that it's very difficult to come out of. For us, it helped that we moved to Barcelona for a bit. That was 4 years ago. We went to Barcelona. Katie wanted to study. And suddenly in Barcelona, things were cheaper. So I was doing freelance work, but I was working way less. And I had much more time to do things I wanted to do. And when you were a student there, you had a lot of spare time.
Yeah. And the atmosphere was a bit different as well, because as well, for not having to go into a studio or company to work there, it meant that sharing a space, everyone else in the space was also taking a lot of time off commercial work. So it suddenly seemed more like an option, I think.
Yeah.
You don't think, because you're not seeing everyone around you is nonstop doing commercial work, and you're like, oh God, I should be too. You're like, oh yeah, actually, I can allow myself to have a week off and do a personal project. I can afford that, so I should do.
But charging more is so key. Is that it's so easy to, you put a rate and then you assume that that's the normal thing. You need to ask, if you have the opportunity, to people around you how much they're charging, to know their rates and to put them up. And it looks that the places you are freelancing at, they are your friends. And they can be very friendly, but if they can pay you less, they will pay you less. They're not going to tell you. And sometimes I heard of exceptional places that say, look, your day rate should go up, but in general they don't tell you. So,
and the worst they're gonna do is say no, and then you'll be like, okay,
yeah.
So no one's gonna be like, no, and don't come back, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, usually I'm always telling everyone, you know, charge more than you think. And, you know, most places will negotiate with you. They're not just going to be like, no, like, go away. We never want to speak to you again. You know, they're going to go, well, we can't really afford that. And, you know, that's actually the answer that you want, because then it means that you're charging enough, you know, if they are negotiating with you, rather than, you know, if you say, oh yeah, my rate's this, and they go, yep, straight away you're like, damn, probably could have got more.
Actually, I meant this. Yeah.
That's reminds me to, there was a film I always loved when I was a teenager, Transporting. I still like it. And he goes to, they're doing a drugs exchange. Yeah. And he says the amount of money he's going to charge for the drugs. And then you see that the guy in his suitcase had like so much more money. And the guy's like, yep. And that's exactly what happens. Yeah. And I think that is very difficult to know and really scary. I do understand. For me, it was very scary at the beginning. And also because, you know, it's not when you are charging, I don't know, £150, something really a small day rate for working in the UK. That's like ridiculously small. But when you are coming from making no money, you think, wow, £150 and I'm having fun with After Effects or with Cinema 4D. But that's not good. And in the long term, you will realize that that's not going to get you. That's going to make you very tired, and you're going to barely make money to pay your rent. And if you need a new laptop, you are going to be struggling to buy a decent one and all of those things, because you have to pay taxes and you need to, you know, when you start working as an independent freelancer, there are a lot of associated costs that you don't see at the beginning. And I think you need to understand that it's not about multiplying your day rate by 20 and say, oh, that's my monthly salary. That's not how it works, because you might have times in which you are ill or times in which you are tired. Or there are so many situations, or even times in which someone comes with a super interesting music video opportunity that they don't have money, the budget for, and you want to join. So you need to charge those big people in order to be able to afford what you want to make. Yeah.
Yeah. And we definitely apply the same thing working as a studio now.
Yeah.
Trying to charge more with bigger clients who we know have more money, and then it can allow us to do smaller projects or collaborations, or like all this fashion stuff as well, which we really enjoy and also advances our work.
What we do as a studio, things have changed now. What we ask is for the budget for the entire campaign, so day rates don't apply anymore, because depending on the budget, we hire animators when we get bigger projects, and we can hire people for the team when we get bigger projects. So we need to know the budget. But the budgets can vary so much in the studio environment. So what we do is we always ask for them to give us a number at the beginning. So if someone sends us an email and they say, oh, we have this new campaign for Google for their website, you have no idea if this is the biggest campaign of the year for Google or if this is a little thing that Google is going to have for a week on a side of the website. So if they give you an initial number, and we don't really engage in more conversation until they give us that number. And once we have the number, now we know what we are talking about. Now you know if you're talking about a super big project in which you're going to put 20 people on, or if you're talking a little thing that we are going to do on the side. And it might be that we are interested in both things, but if you don't know, you might make the mistake of saying something ridiculously small, and you might even not get the project because they are like, are these guys a studio or what is this? So, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, sometimes they'll say how much, and we'll say how much, and they'll say how much, and you have to really hold your ground and have a few awkward emails back and forth, because in the end, they do have a budget allocated, so they really have to say.
Yeah, well, I love that. I love that you're being forceful with, like, no, you have to say how much, you know, because most people are scared to do that because they don't want to, you know, scare the clients away. So is that how you do it? You just literally say, hey, you need to tell us, you know, we're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the way, but I think that's what they're playing with. That's their whole idea, is to try and get you to do it for the least amount of money. And because obviously our jobs previously had just been creating the thing, but now if you're also managing the whole thing and organizing the budget and producing the whole project yourself, you might just want to draw the pictures, and you don't want to be some kind of hard-nosed business person. And I think that they know that, and so they're able to exploit you a lot easier.
I think this all reminds me to, you know, when people come door to door to, because they want you to sign up for a charity or some subscription thing. So what they do is you open the door and they start talking for a long time, and they don't even let you talk. And they know that the longer they keep you there, the more guilty you're going to feel for wasting their time. And clients do that. Agencies do that all the time. They want to have a lot of conversations. They point to you. You talk to the creative director, the art director, to this thing, to the other. And they don't want to talk about budget, because they know that the more invested you are, then you're going to feel very guilty about bringing the conversation. So what we do is we do it from the very beginning. We don't even want to talk about it on Skype or like on a video call. We want to talk about it on email, because email is cold. We are better at emailing, like, when we talk about that.
Yeah, it's like, if you do it all before, then you can be really nice and friendly for the whole project. But if you meet and you're really friendly, and then you send an email being like, no, you have to tell me the budget, in a very direct, stern business way, then they'll be like, wait, I thought these people were nice and now they're being mean. But actually, it's not mean, it's just standing up for yourself.
Because
and then you can relax and be friendly and you can be extra helpful with anything.
We have even seen, not knowing the budget, with campaigns for which you are pitching, which is the most absurd thing ever. So you pitch for a project and there are another three studios pitching to get this TV ad, but nobody knows the budget. So then imagine if you win it, then you negotiate the budget, but you already won the campaign. You already did all the work. You won the pitch. And then imagine if they say, oh, we have £20. And you're like, okay, well, what was that all about? You should know in advance what is going to be the campaign. And I think it doesn't need to be set in stone. You know, someone can say a number, and if later on the process they need to reduce it a bit, then you can say, okay, in that case, we will reduce the amount of deliverables. Or if they say, oh, we do have a bit more money, you can say, okay, in that case, we can be more detailed on this animation. So it's something that once you have an anchor point, it's very easy to move around.
Yeah, I mean, thanks so much for being really open about all of this stuff as well, because I feel like this is what people need to hear. You know, they need to hear that you've got to be a bit, I guess, hard-nosed or something like that is the way to say it. You know, you have to put your business hat on, which is obviously what we're all about at Motion Hatch. So I really appreciate that. I just wanted to ask you a bit more then about, like, how do you get most of your direct clients? Because obviously I know that you've worked with Spotify and stuff like that, which is incredible. So I just wanted to know, like, how do most of the, you know, clients come to you?
The clients... just, you never really know, and people will just pop into an email and it's very exciting. So I think that, because with a lot of these the bigger new tech companies that we're working with, if we work with Spotify, like you said, they have a lot of in-house teams who are basically just like young creative people who like
look through social
Instagram
media,
or look at Behance, or just enjoy following things on their social media. And then when a project comes along, that person says, oh yeah, I know the perfect person, and then they reach out. So I think it sounds maybe a lot more organized, but generally when because we do try and ask people how they came across us, and usually it's been that.
So we haven't done any cold emailing. We don't really do that now. We have done if we won awards for a campaign, for example, with Spotify, we send to some of the clients an email saying, oh, we won this award, just to let you know that we do this type of campaign that is bigger than what we've done with you before. But most of the contacts, I mean, most of the technology companies that we don't work with, Google or Apple and Microsoft, all of those ones are direct people within the company. We had at the very beginning representation agency representing us. You know, we had the UK, Germany, France, different people in different places. And with everyone, we did a trial periods because we wanted to see how it would work. And what we realized is that our media, social media, was growing so fast that really quickly we surpassed the amount of followers and engagement that we were having personally compared to the people that were representing us. So then it didn't make sense that someone was representing us when we were representing ourselves, you know, with a bigger audience. So we decided to go completely solo. And we rarely now work with, sometimes we work with agencies if there's a campaign that we want to do, but in general, we try to work directly with clients. We think it is the future, especially with these big companies that Kate is saying, with Spotify. It's so much better working directly with them. It's a fluid communication. They know what they want. There are no confusion on what you are. You don't need to have people in the middle. And yeah, I'm personally quite negative about the entire concept of the creative director and art director. I don't even know exactly what the difference between those positions are. Is in general, when we are working with agencies, it's just people telling you things that you don't know if those things come from the client, if they come from the agency, they come from, I don't really know, or if it's their personal opinion. So
yeah, or sometimes the client will say that they'll give a list of feedback, and then the agency will for some reason filter the feedback, but they actually don't know anything about the process. So then when they come to us, we say, oh, actually, well, that would have been easy, and that is actually very difficult that you agreed to. And generally, we just prefer so much to work directly. And if you can reduce as much as possible the amount of steps in the middle, I find that much, much easier.
Yeah.
And you get more money as well, because all those people in the middle don't get it.
Yeah, so you feel like the best way that you've managed to get like these big direct clients is through growing your social media, like consistently putting out social posts, making personal projects, like trying to be innovative with those. Like, I'm just trying to really pin down like the points that have made it like such a success. And obviously that's, it might not be the same for everybody, but it just helps everyone listening to think about, well, what could I do that would help me to grow, you know, my studio, my brand, my freelance career?
I think, yes. I think a few things. We started, I think, getting as well bigger projects when, once we were big enough that we had enough big brands in our website, we changed a bit how we were presenting ourselves. Before, we were focusing a lot on, this is Katie Annabelle. And I think that Katie Annabelle, the artist, is much more on Instagram because people like that. They like knowing about us and it's more personal. But on our website, we present ourselves more as a production company because we do have, now in Barcelona, we have the studio space, so we can get a lot of freelancers if we need to. So in our website, if you go now to the About section, we made a photo of the studio we have in Barcelona, and we drew a lot of people, which they were not there in the moment, but it's a way of saying to the client, look, we can work with big teams of people because we've done it before and it works. So think that you are competing against, now we are competing against really big studios like Back or, you know, So Many or Animate, or these people have constantly 40, 50, Back has like 300 people working there. So we need to say to the client in a way and present ourselves in a way in which if people come to us, they know that we can build those big teams as well. So I think that was the transformation. No, that's the...
Yeah, definitely. It's two different kind of personas. We're definitely on the social media side. I think that it's super useful in getting clients through those, like what we were saying, if someone in Spotify is following your work and comes across you and really likes it and likes all the engagement, likes that you have a lot of following, likes seeing your consistent style throughout the timeline. But then obviously on the other side, if they pitch it to their company or if another company comes across you on the website, they want to be able to show, oh, there's this really serious production company that can do the campaign. They don't want to be like, oh yeah, I've got somebody's Instagram. Yeah. So it's kind of the two faces of it, yeah.
And as well, Behance has been very big for us. I think right now we have 30,000 people following us there on Behance, and our website is connected to Behance. We are doing everything through the Adobe portfolio. They're not paying us to say this, but I always say that to everyone because it's great. It works. You can, right now, it works quite well, and you can personalize it. You can make it really unique to what you want. And the cool thing is that once you finish a project on Behance, we sync it with our website. So we don't spend a lot of time doing the same thing again and again. And it's been, we are so into it right now, into building projects, that when we're doing personal stuff, at the same time we are creating images, we are already uploading them as a draft to our Behance page. So we are building the, sometimes when we're doing personal work, we are looking at the project, and at some point we think like, oh, this is long enough to be a project for Behance, and then we close it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we say, oh, we should make one more image because it's not good enough still. So we are really conscious of building projects for Behance. And Behance, sometimes they give you these little badges. So you get the Behance badge or the illustration one. And when they give you one of those, you get to the top of the website. And they've been giving us a lot of those, and that helped us grow a lot on that platform. And I think a lot of work comes from there as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's great that you mentioned Behance as well. I think the other thing that you do really well, which is probably linked to this, is, you know, present all of the work, like you were saying earlier, as more like case studies. So even if it's personal work, like you were saying about telling people, you know, why you started that project and what you wanted to do with it and things like that. Do you feel like that helps give the clients some confidence and also shows them a bit more behind the scenes and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're building it like it's a commercial project. And sometimes I think as well that the language that you use is quite important. On Behance projects, sometimes you see people when they're like, oh, I wanted to look at using colours and shapes. And what we try and do, because we're linking it to the website as well, and because it's kind of a more professional setting, it's not Instagram, we say, this project is an exploration into colour and shapes. You're being a bit more general. You're not being like, oh, I really like the colour of this, or in a friendly conversation way. It's a bit more serious, a bit more like you probably would put it on your website, or like a big studio.
We put quite grand names sometimes, and we have a project called Balance, and the text is, you know, we made a cover text in which it looks like an album cover or something, and that type of thing helps selling the project a lot. The language, even at the beginning, we were, as Kate was saying, using that language that is a bit more being careful, almost being sorry of what you've done. And at the end, people put the text saying like, oh, I hope you like it or something. And then we were like, no, this is going to go in our website. I don't hope you like it. If you are here, you should be liking it. I don't need to tell you. You know, it's a different way of expressing it that I think helped us to grow. As Kate is saying, is the language we use in our Instagram and our Behance is very different. And in Behance, we are more, it's connected to our website. It's part of the studio sphere.
Yeah, that's really clever. I love that you're putting so much thought into all of these things. And I think that, you know, has probably been a big part of why you've been successful. The work is really good too, but having those two things together, I think, is really, you know, what has made some of these bigger brands and stuff take more notice of you and your work, because you have the kind of professionalism and you also have the like fantastic art side of it as well.
Yeah, I think undoubtedly, and definitely when we were starting out a bit more, these are all things obviously that we've learned along the way, but sometimes we'd look at other studios that we like, we'd look at their website and think, how do they present the project? What kind of thing do they write in the text about the projects? How do they present themselves? And so we try and kind of see what people that we like did as well. So it's learning from other people, learning a bit from experiences and feedback that we're getting. But definitely, yeah, I think it's important to see what other people in your sphere are doing. Because if no one's saying, I hope you like it at the end of the project, probably that's because that's not how you get really big clients.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Before we wrap this one up, I just wanted to ask you about, because I saw that recently you did a paid post from a tablet company, right? And obviously, because you've got a lot of followers on Instagram, I just wondered if you thought that that was going to be more of what you do in the future, and maybe what more of what other people start doing is kind of studios almost become sort of influencers as well.
So we've been thinking a lot about it. With this, for example, we generally like the brand. We think it's great as well to have someone competing against Wacom, that we use Wacom before forever, because that was the only brand that people would use if you were buying a tablet. So when we tried these tablets, it was like, okay, this is quite cool that a company is competing against them. So we feel comfortable with it. But we got contacted before by other people.
Yeah, we've had different offers for things in the past that we feel like maybe would be a bit dishonest. We've actually had got an offer from another computer company who were not going to send us the computer. And they say, oh, just say that you made the image using this computer. And we were like, don't you see everything that's wrong with that? We can't, in all honesty, sell something to somebody that we haven't even tried, pretending that we made our image with it. We don't even know if you could.
Or some watch brand. And, you know, for example, I never use a watch. And you sometimes use the Apple Watch, but you don't. Not very, but it would be weird to suddenly be promoting watches when we don't use them. So that I think it's good to do something that connects to what we do. But I do think that, I mean, we can tell from the engagement that when we put the stuff with Huion, that people really care, that brands can get a lot from using, accounts that are getting a bit bigger, from like giving them money or products to promote their brand, because it does people care about. Sometimes we even don't want to focus too much on the technical part, but people care so much about which laptop we have, what's the brand of keyboard we use, what is the chair we are using. People ask a lot of that. And I think, there's an opportunity there for brands.
Yeah,
for
sure. I'm surprised that they don't do it more, to be honest. If any laptop companies are listening.
Yeah, totally. I think it's just really fascinating. And I think you're doing some amazing stuff. I just wanted to ask you one more question. If someone was listening to this and they want to start a studio and have a particular focus on one style, what is one thing that you feel like that they should do today?
Oh, that's difficult. And I guess it depends if they have the style already. If they have the style and they think this is so good and the world needs to see it, I think just make a lot of work in that style. Make lots of images and projects. Do as much as you can, and you'll see the style evolving and getting better. And then you'll see that the more you do and the more you put out, the more you're going to get back. If you only post something on Instagram like once a month, you're not really going to get that constant engagement. So I think just go for it and work and make things and don't get stuck on something.
Yeah, and move on, continuously producing, and then never be afraid if you don't like it in 3 months. You can get rid of some of the stuff that you don't like now. It's completely fine. Nobody is going to complain if they go to your website and something is not there anymore. It's moving on, constantly producing, and then you eventually get there. So
That's basically what we've done, is like 3 years of just 24/7 working on things.
Not 24/7.
You enjoy doing it. Yeah. So like sometimes when you're working on something all day and then you're enjoying it, and so over dinner we're also discussing it. Because it's fun as well. Yeah. So I think don't obviously get stressed out about it. But do make it your love, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, this has been a fantastic episode. So do you want to tell the audience where they can find out more about you and your work?
Oh, yeah. Our Instagram, I think, is the most fun place because we do a lot of stories and we are sharing constantly things there. And then on our Behance is where we put constantly our projects. And that's the main two things. Approach. Yeah, the more serious approach. Yeah.
And both of them just look Cabeza Patata. I'm write us a message if you have any questions or follow-ups.
We are the ones managing the Instagram, as Katie said. Right. So
yeah, that's awesome. And we'll put all the links as well in the show notes so everybody can find it easily. So thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Aidan.
Thanks so much to Abel and Katie for coming on the show. I hope you'll agree that was an incredible episode. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you get your podcast from. And why not share this episode with a friend who you feel might find it useful as well? You can always take a screenshot of you listening to the podcast and let us know what you think of it. Maybe share it on your Instagram stories. We are at Motion Hatch on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. I appreciate you. See ya.